Anyway, the first two scriptures that I put on number one about what kind of prayers are these are, what's the Genesis 18, who's being talked about there?
Abraham is praying for God's blessing.
On whom?
Lot.
About us. Wait. I put Abraham, God, Lot, Sodom, and Gomorrah.
Okay. All right. Right. Abraham, in this particular passage, he's asking God to save the faithful or the good people in Sodom. How does that discussion go?
A big number?
Surely there's 50 there, you know, you'll say, oh yes, I'll save it. I mean, it got down to 10, I think, and they couldn't even find 10 people. They ended up with 4 who ended up left the city. Not even his, Lot's daughter's husbands left. So, what kind of prayer is that? When Abraham praying for Sodom?
Intercessory.
And the same goes with Moses. Why was he praying for Israel?
He was praying for the forgiveness of the people.
Why? What did God want to do? He wanted to destroy them. He was begging God to change his mind and do something that he wasn't planning to do. That takes a little bit of a boldness, doesn't it? To say, God, please don't do that. Don't do that. And also, you know, not just boldness, but humility and asking God to consider the needs of others. Moses knows, not only does he know these people, not better than God, but he knows these people, but he knows what the reaction of the peoples round about would be if God were to destroy the Israelites. And what would that be?
Your God doesn't have the power to do.
The effect it would have on the people that have observed what God has already done for them, brought them out of Egypt, and you know, your God, you know, he just destroyed them. So, you know, he didn't want God's glory to be diminished because of that. So the third one is also an intercessory prayer, but it's a little different. It's not that the Colossians are sinning. Let's turn to Colossians 1. What is the situation here? What is Paul and Timothy praying for?
They would grow.
What?
They would grow.
Right. He's praying for their spiritual maturity or spiritual development. And I said Paul and Timothy because the letter is from Paul and Timothy, even though Paul wrote it. He even mentions later in the book, who else is praying for him? 4:12. Epaphras, yes. He's also praying for him. So this is a situation where they're not in sin. God's fixing to destroy them. Paul is hoping that God will give them opportunities to grow and help them to be encouraged either by Paul's intercession, Paul's and Timothy's and Epaphras, or Epaphras, however you say that, that they would grow in wisdom and spiritual maturity. The reason I did this particular question is there are other kinds of prayers, right? What are we generally, what kind of prayers are we usually doing?
Thanksgiving.
What else?
Praise.
What else?
Asking for help.
Asking for help. Supplication. We're generally focusing our prayers on what I need, what I want, what I'm going through, you know, what I'm dealing with. And I think it's the whole point of this lesson is to get us to. This isn't news to anybody. This isn't anything new, but to remind us that it is not wrong to pray supplication type prayers. It's not wrong to ask. I mean, we're told to pray for what we need and what we want, what our desires are. But if we take the focus off of ourselves sometimes and pray for others, that can help us with our humility. That reminds us that somebody else's needs might be more than mine. Somebody else might be in a worse position than I'm in. Or maybe turn our supplication prayers into thanksgiving prayers because we are so blessed. You know, we have so much and we're not as bad off as we might think we are sometimes. It's really easy to get down in a hole and think things are really awful. you know, especially if we're having health problems or financial problems or marital problems or, you know, whatever. What?
Children
problems. Never stop. That's the gift that keeps on giving, isn't it? One of them. Okay, so back to Colossians 1. What are the specific things that Paul prays for? In that verse 9 and 10.
Filled with the knowledge of
his will. Filled with knowledge.
Worthy of our calling.
Yep. What else?
Him.
Yep.
Bearing fruit.
Bearing fruit. And one more.
Increasing in knowledge.
Increasing in knowledge. I don't know what else we could possibly add to the list that would help us to be a better servant, to be a better Christian, to be a better anything, just citizen, be a better wife, be a better mother, be a better sister. All of these things will enhance our lives. And if somebody, obviously the Colossians know that Paul is praying for this for them because he wrote them that. So how do you think that made them feel?
Thankful, hopefully.
Yes. Wouldn't we feel thankful if we knew that somebody was praying for us that we would increase spiritually, increase in knowledge, and be more pleasing to God? How encouraging would that be? So how does this kind of prayer, these things that Paul's praying for, how does it show humility?
Not just thinking of himself.
Just
thinking of himself.
Right. He's not thinking of himself. Did Paul ever think of himself?
No.
Not much. I can't think of anything. Carol, what were you going to say?
His work was for their salvation.
Right. He was totally focused on others. Even before he met Jesus on the road to Damascus, what was his work focused on?
Pleasing God.
Pleasing God. He's always had a good heart. He's always tried to do what's right. But this to me, it's the most humble thing to be so focused on the good and well-being and salvation and hope of others. Did he ever pray for himself?
Yes,
he did. He asked God to remove his thorn. That's just one example. So it's not that he didn't pray for himself, but he was very, very focused on other people. And I think this shows a really high level of humility that you know, throughout his letters. All his letters were written to encourage people or bawl them out for something or other. You know, if they were messing up, he's sure, he still had their well-being in mind. He's trying to get them straightened up and turn around and be what they needed to be. Okay, so is he praying for trouble-free lives or freedom from physical cares? Nope, we never see that. Is he praying for churches to grow in number? No, he's praying for churches to grow in quality, for the people to grow, for the actual people to grow and be what they ought to be. I think it's important for us to think about the fact that we might have to train ourselves to employ this kind of prayer, to regularly employ this kind of prayer, because it requires constant thought of others. If we're not thinking about our brethren or our families or even the people around us in the world, if we don't make a point of that, how easy is it not to, to just kind of lose track of that? Especially like in a situation like the last 2 years, the first few months for sure, when we're all holed up at home. You know, man, was it easy to just kind of pull back in your shell and just exist. So I really think that this is something that requires work. And intentional thought to make ourselves do this. I don't think this comes naturally, is what I'm trying to say, I guess. Has Paul even met these people? Chapter 2, verse 1.
What was your question?
Has Paul even met these people? He doesn't even know them. All he knows about them is he's heard of their faith, 1:4, and he knows that they're trying. He knows that they're trying to live right, and that he wants them to know that how encouraging that is to him. That he knows that about them, but he has not met them. So, do we ever pray for somebody we haven't met? Give me an example.
Hurricanes.
Who?
Hurricanes.
We pray for hurricanes?
The people that have been through it.
Oh. Okay. I, you know what? I think I had something in my head that I thought was going to come out of your mouth, and that was a little shocking. Yes, people who are who have been had their lost everything in a hurricane. What about some of the preachers we support? There's preachers, a lot of those that we've never even seen them, never met them. We have their reports to read. We know what they're doing. Anybody else you want to think of that, that we could pray for that we've never met?
The leaders of our country.
I was just going to say, how about those in power? Even if we don't like them. Sometimes we need to pray that they do the right thing. Or, you know, pray for things to change where people will do the right thing. That kind of thing.
Sometimes we pray for people that we don't know who they might be, but that can thwart some of the things that our leaders are trying to do and wanting to do.
Somebody to step up and take responsibility.
Don't know who that might be, but that someone be a leader enough to say, we can't do this.
Right.
Some people ask you to pray for friends of theirs.
Exactly. Like, most people in this room don't know my sister-in-law, Nadine's son, daughter-in-law. And we've asked y'all to pray for her because she's been so sick. All of us have relatives that, you know, have needed prayers. Well, we've met Carol's brother. I never met her daddy back when we prayed for him. That kind of thing. Any other comments y'all would like to make before we go to number three? Okay. What? Let's look at chapter 4, verse 3 and 4. Joanne, will you read that, please?
For he is at same time, for us as well, that God will open up to us a door for the word, so that we may speak forth the mystery of Christ, for which I have also been imprisoned, that I may make it clear in the way I ought to speak.
Okay, I'm sorry, we really should have started in 2 that says he's continuing earnestly in prayer, or he's telling them to continue earnestly in prayer and being vigilant in thanksgiving, and then meanwhile, praying for us. He is asking them, what is his humility? What's he doing that's asking, that evidences his humility? Can't get it out. He's asking them to pray for him. They know what he's doing. They've heard of him. They know about his work. They know that he's traveling around preaching. And what is he asking them to pray for him exactly? What does he say there?
Asking how to speak. You know, he's an apostle. He has the Holy Spirit. He can do miracles. But he's asking them to pray so that he would be able to say the right thing.
Okay. And what else?
Make it clear.
How about the opportunity to be able to speak? That doors would open. I'm not sure I've ever prayed for doors to open for somebody else. I'm trying to, I thought it was understood when I was praying about the preachers we support in foreign countries, you know, that they would have opportunities to save the lost. But I think that's a really interesting thing to think about, you know, not just for opportunities to open for me to be either an example or a teacher or an encouragement to somebody, but for that to happen for someone else. That's kind of a new thought. Let's look at Matthew 9:38. Melissa, will you read that, please?
Therefore, beseech the Lord of the harvest and send out workers into his harvest.
Who's talking here?
Christ.
Yes, he's encouraging, who's he talking to?
The people.
Right, I think he's still in a, still on the boat. Nope, he departed from there, he's just walking along. He's going in and out of cities and villages, and he's praying. He's asking the people to pray that the Lord would send out workers. But more than that, what is he setting here? What kind of an example is he setting? Even he prayed. He's praying. He's setting an example of maybe he's not setting an example. What do y'all think?
Prayer,
is he praying here?
Prayer was a big part of Jesus' life.
Yes, and I've got some other verses here that are probably better than this one, because I think he's telling them to pray here now that I think about it.
I was thinking about he was praying for laborers in the vineyard.
Yes, I can't tell if he's praying or if he's telling them to pray for laborers in the vineyard. That's exactly what he's praying for. Let's go to Luke 22:32. Maybe this one's a little more clear.
In verse 37, he said to his disciples, and then 38, the siege. So I think he's telling his disciples to pray.
Okay, so not just an example, but a command.
Command
is the command to pray. Okay, let's look at Luke 22:32. Pat, when you get there, we read that, please.
32. For I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail you. When once you have turned again, strengthen your brothers.
So he's actually praying here. He's setting an example of them. Obviously, he taught them to pray back, they're together and they go through the Lord's Prayer. But here, he is actually praying for Simon that God will sift him as wheat, that he'll come through that hole. And then let's look at John 17. We're not going to read this whole thing, but what is Jesus doing in John 17, the whole chapter? He's praying. The whole chapter is Jesus talking to God. He's actually even praying for whom?
Well, he prays for his disciples, and then he turns and says, and us that we may...
What does he start? Who does he start out praying for?
Oh, himself.
Himself. I'm not denying what you're saying is correct. You're absolutely right. But he starts out, he's praying for himself. So we have not only his command, but we have his example. All through this prayer, he's asking God to glorify him, to help him to get through the suffering. And then he prays for the disciples, sanctify them. As God sent him into the world, Jesus has sent them into the world. Look at verse 20. I do not pray for these alone, but also for those who will believe in me through their word. Which is a lot of people, that they all may be one, as you, Father, are in me and I in you. Look at verse 24. I desire that they also, whom you gave me, may be with me where I am, that they may behold my glory, which you have given me, for you loved me before the foundation of the world. He's praying for their salvation, that they be with him in eternity. So I think it's important to remember that we have this example of how to pray, why to pray, who to pray for. Obviously, we have the apostles praying too, and Paul frequently. But I know we could find lots of other examples of Jesus praying. Any other comments on that section? All right, let's look at number 4. How can praying for others be hard for us, possibly? Maybe not, but in what ways could this happen?
If they have some of the same problems that you have, it may be difficult for you to pray for them.
Okay.
Or
they may
not.
Yeah, how easy it to pray for somebody that's mean to you or that treats you badly? That's commanded, obviously, but it's not easy. That's not an easy thing to do. We have to remember that our enemies are what? Are who? Who are they?
They're
our neighbor, our brother, or somebody, our family even. But they are God's children too. They are created by Him and loved by Him. They may not be His heirs. They may not yet, be heirs and eligible for salvation, but there's always that hope. And we, no matter how they act. This reminds me, too, of the government. What if we don't agree with the government? What if we think they're all idiots and doing something stupid? I mean, do we ever think people do stupid things? Yes, you do. Of course you do.
Even we do.
And not only can people be mean and ugly and hateful, but they can just be, senseless. Just be silly and stupid.
Well, you can pray for them and pray for them and talk to them and pray for them, but they don't seem to hear. They're dull of hearing. They don't seem to to change. And so, at what time, sometimes you think, well, what's the use?
And by silly and stupid, I mean like thoughtless. People that are just, they're not tuned in to the world around them, or they're not they're not focused on others' needs. Their entire focus is turned toward their center. It's turned toward themselves. They don't see outside themselves. There's a lot of people like that in the world. It's hard to pray for those people, isn't it? And there's a lot of people that maybe aren't able. Maybe they're just mentally not able or whatever. So our prayers naturally are going to center around ourselves, our needs and our wants and our comforts and our maybe our family and our particular circle of friends or our health or whatever. Do we always feel others' pain like we feel ours? Just a second. Mm-hmm. No, we can't always feel like, I don't know what my sister-in-law is going through. She's been sedated for 3 weeks. I don't know if she can hear her husband sitting there beside her. I don't know. What would you want to say?
Well, that was one of the things that I was going to say. Sometimes we don't know the true circumstances or the true, you know, what to pray for. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I had down is that sometimes we don't think it's possible. I'm afraid I'm guilty of, you know, limiting God. We don't pray for things because we think it's impossible to ask for
things. Like when somebody's dying. And, you know, you've been told they're not going to live, and so you limit God and think, well, there's no point in praying for them to live. Can you pray for somebody to that God would heal somebody and that he would take away their suffering sooner rather than later at the same time? I think you can pray for both.
My mother, I reached a point. I could not pray for her to continue to live. I couldn't pray for her to die. I just asked God to end her suffering. And his will be done in his way. That's all I need to say. Because she had been sick for so long, so many years. And then we wound up with her on a life support that she should have never been put on. And the doctors are telling us that could be long and protracted. Because it's harder to get them off than it is to get them on. And there's been other cases like that. Cases that I think I know how it ought to be fixed. But God doesn't always see it that way. And sometimes we ask for things specifically and we get them, but then it doesn't turn out the way we want it to. I think of Jason Swan. His daddy wanted him to live. He prayed so hard for him to live. But his daddy's idea of him living was that he got up and walked out of there like nothing ever happened. And Jason lived. And he suffered for 40 years.
He's about 40 when he died. He was 19 when it happened.
And so all those years. And so sometimes I try to be careful what I specifically pray for. Because God may grant my specific request. But it may not be what's best for somebody else. Sometimes we just have to. And I think that's a problem that Lynn said. We don't really know what to pray for. And so either we don't pray or we get so specific with our prayers.
Yeah. What about somebody like Tony, who is stuck in a cycle? You know, Doug announced, I think it was Sunday, that she was coming up on a year being in the hospital. She's coming up on 2 years, and he just slipped his mind. And you know, when somebody has been sick that long, and remember back when Melanie was in the hospital for a year or so. You know, it's so easy to go about your life and not think about somebody who is just... And even Jodine, when you were so sick for so long, we didn't see you. When you don't see somebody and you don't think about as often as you should, it's sometimes hard to relate to that or to remember that. They're really good here about putting people in the bulletin, I think, you know, that...
We have a standing prayer list.
Yes. And pretty good about announcements, too. You know, I know that you can't get up every time and list every single person. I know that, but it does help to remind us. I had a conversation with Sandra. I keep 100 little notebooks. I like paper and I like little notebooks. And I keep lists of stuff like that. And so, you know, when I open it, you know, to make another list, and I see that. Sometimes I keep one specifically for prayer. I have a cousin that told me one time he had a spiral notebook and he made a list of people he prayed for and he would rotate them out. He would kind of like, I can't remember exactly how he described it to me, but he would pray for them for so many weeks, especially somebody in a long-term thing, like, say, Tony. And then he would come back around to it, like, in a month. I mean, you can't pray for every single person, every single prayer. Obviously, we wouldn't have time. But if we write it down, I mean, at least that's how it works for me, because I don't always remember. Just keep an ongoing prayer list. in our or in our phone. Do it in your phone. Were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say another thing in the vein of it's hard for us to pray for people sometimes if they really hurt us.
Yes.
And we feel like God's giving them their just rewards. And we still need to pray for them. And even if maybe they have not repented of what they did to us, God expects us to pray for our enemies. And why not pray for some? Why should not we not think that He would want us to pray for someone who had done something to me? But I don't always look at myself and see what I may have done to somebody else that I don't even know about. And this person may not know what they did to you. You don't, because you know, we get hurt. And we talk to everybody else, but we never go talk to the person that we feel like hurt us. They may not even know. And they may have done it on purpose. But God expects us, if someone has wronged us, to go talk to them for their soul's sake. And so, but sometimes when we think about praying for that person, we almost want to thank God for what He's done to them. And that's really a bad attitude.
Are we supposed to pray for vengeance? No, vengeance is God.
We leave that to God. We can pray for vindication. David
yes.
prayed for vindication. Right. And if someone is doing something to us that needs to stop and we need to be shown that we're right, we can ask God, God, help people realize that this was not what happened. We can pray for vindication because David did over and over. When the lies that were being told about him and all. I mean, and he had brought it on himself. A lot of it was his punishment for Bathsheba. And yet, he continued to pray to God for his own self and for those who were harming him to be stopped.
Okay. All right. Let's look. I'm sorry, Linda.
I also thought about it takes time and mental presence to really pray.
That's what I mentioned back here on focusing on other people. It does. You can't just throw off a prayer.
We get busy in our schedules,
yeah.
And we sit and it's like reading the scriptures. You've got to set aside a time if you really are going to be diligent about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got to plan for that. Often I get busy, or the day is gone, and I haven't done it.
I think that's why writing it down helps me sometimes. And another thought I had is if you think about people in groups, large and small, you know, say you start with your family, your immediate family, then your extended family, and then your church family, then your neighbors and friends, and then say the Christians out in the world, you know, people who we don't know and never will know personally, doctors that touch your family's lives, your school teachers, people that touch your kids' lives. Sometimes I visualize go around the church building and visualize where people sit and, you know, pray for people that way. And then there's groups like the military. Do you ever pray for the military that they're out there in harm's way defending our country? And it just, I can't hardly stand to think about them, you know, being in the situations they're in. I watch NCIS, stuff like that. They're in yucky situations. They're in bad situations. And foreign preachers, we've already talked about, and foreign Christians. And what about the disadvantaged people that have to travel through life? Like, look at Jeff. I mean, he hadn't always been in a wheelchair, but, you know, I don't think his leg or back or whatever it is that makes him not be, I think it's his knees, actually, that make him where he can't walk. I don't think he's going to get past that. I think he's going to have to use a wheelchair.
Well, they hopefully will be able to replace them. They were getting
is he not
the
older?
Shoulder. Well, no, it's the eye problem. If one thing, if they were going to replace the shoulder, well, then this, right before that, this eye started to bleed. And so, but
he just can't get
having,
to it.
Yeah, they can't just go in and operate on the knees because you can't put any, because when you have to rehab, well, then that strains, but you can't have any kind of strain because it makes the eye bleed worse.
Okay.
And so it's a cycle, but I don't know that he'll ever be able to fix any of it because it seems like every time we get one thing kind of figured out, something else happens.
Yeah. And can you imagine how frustrating that is for him?
Yeah,
both of them. So, did you finish what you were trying to say, Linda, about, okay, it's a matter of focus. We have to train ourselves to make time to literally think about people we want to pray for. What were you going to say?
You were talking about writing it down, and for a long time, I would just like have a list of different things. And I got this prayer journal. It's basically, it's just a notebook with separations for like family, friends, people you don't know, things that you're grateful for, or like problems. And so it gives you a place to write in specific things. So it's like, oh, well, today I want to pray for this. Or not to forget that, hey, I need to mention the things that I'm grateful for. And it kind of helps combine it all so you can focus on specific things. But at the same time, since it's all in one place, you can go back.
Right, and you can flip back and forth.
And, like, and I don't remember what I prayed
and, for. And maybe you pray, focus on one area today, and tomorrow you move to another area.
But it's nice because I don't remember what I was praying for a year ago, but I can flip back and I can see, like, oh, you know what? I didn't notice that at the time, but it
got better.
It was answered.
Yes,
it was,
yes.
You know, I can.
That's encouraging, too.
And so that kind of makes you feel good.
Well, here's another thing. Somebody told me years ago when I confided that I was having trouble praying. I just was having trouble with it. And they said, have you ever thought about writing your prayers down? And this is similar to making lists and grouping things. But if you write out a whole prayer, say you have a journal and you just write out a prayer, that requires some thought. You have to think about that. And that's something you can refer back to, too, as well as Joanne's talking about later on, and realize that maybe you didn't notice that something was answered. And we can praise God for that. That's time for another prayer. So,
unfortunately, we forget that a lot. We ask for something, and it's granted, and we never think to go back and thank God. Ricky Jenkins held a meeting here one time, and he challenged us, I think, in that meeting to go a whole week and say nothing but prayers of thanksgiving. I don't know that I can do that because there's too many people and other things in my life that I need to talk about, but maybe focusing one prayer a week or something like that, simply on being thankful for what we have and try to remember the things that God has granted that we've requested.
Thanksgiving prayers are never a problem for me. I can pray all day long thanking God for different things. What I have a problem with is praising God. Coming up with ways to praise God and to glorify God in a prayer, praise His name. Steve is so good at that. I mean, he is so inspiring to me because that's one of the things I think he does really well in prayers. And that's something that I need to learn to write down because that's, or read the Psalms.
Yeah,
you can't pray a prayer, read a Psalm. That has helped me immensely. So what is praying for others going to help us to resist?
Well, I had a friend one time who was having difficulty. They were both Christians, and she was having difficulty with this particular Christian. And she said, I started praying for them. She said, I find it's real hard to have a bad attitude about somebody I'm praying so hard for. And so it may help us resist a bad attitude about a brother too. And really, it wasn't anything specific. It was just, but you know how some people just rub each other the wrong way. It's not intentional. It's just their personalities are so different. And it just takes a while sometimes to get settled in and become better brothers and sisters. And sometimes if we'll pray for that person, I hadn't thought about that until she said it, but I've tried it and it works.
My sister does that a lot. She's told me that a lot. And I don't know if that's something that comes along with being a preacher's wife because, being in a fishbowl, so to speak, you're probably so used to it, I don't know if you think about it anymore. And you've been here a long time, so
Well, the thing is, I had a different attitude than Steve. I was young, I'm not tired. I don't answer to the things that Steve has to answer to. And I never wanted me to feel that way. I'm in love with him and I want to take care of him. That doesn't mean I always agree with everything he does or says.
Just like any other one.
Just like him, yeah. And so I have tried to just be a member. And I didn't want our children to feel like, you're the preacher's kid, you can't do that. No, you're a Christian's kid, you can't do that. And so I've never really had an issue with that. Maybe it's because I was too young and stupid. But
she did come to a preacher's wife late in life, I will say.
Well, that's true. But
it was an adjustment.
Yeah, it is. But if you just take it, I'm just a Christian, and that's all I am here. I'm a wife of a preacher, but that doesn't give me any special privilege or any special title. It's just my husband is not the president.
You know what? I can relate. I felt that way as an elder's wife. Somebody said something to me about, well, you're an elder's wife. And I said, what's that have to do with anything? I'm a Christian. I'm just like you.
That's exactly.
And I didn't ever feel like that made me special or different. Mm-hmm. I was just his wife.
I shouldn't. Because as an elder, my husband's trying to do is help people get their souls to heaven. You know, he's not a dictator. He's not somebody to be looked up. And I appreciate people appreciating him for his work. But that's what they need to appreciate him for, not because he's anything special as a human. He's just, and the other elders, their work in trying to save our souls and keep our souls on the right path.
Absolutely. Okay, so how about if we're praying for others, it's going to help us from being too self-absorbed. When we become depressed, what often causes depression? Obviously, there's a clinical depression. There's something. There's a medical situation. I'm talking about circumstances of life can sometimes pile up on us.
Thinking about things that have us upset.
Yeah, things that get to us, that get us upset, that get us mad, that get us hurt. It is real easy to get into a spiral and go into depression. And that, you know, if we are not focused on fighting self-absorption, we're never going to get out of that. We have to focus on others to get out of that. I remember talking to somebody one time that had trouble with this, and I said, you need to, have you tried talking to other people? Have you tried seeing if somebody else needs some help? I'm not sure this person was ever mentally capable of that in hindsight, but that's the only thing I knew to help her, to say to her, really, to be honest. It was something she struggled with all the time. But anyway, I believe it can help us. It's helped me. It's helped me get past that before. And what about putting others above self? I mean, putting ourselves above others. What about pride? You know, Philippians 2, 3, and 4 is talking about the fact that others are more significant than ourselves. You know, putting others above ourselves. That's what Jesus did. He put himself above us to come to earth as a human being, to become human and to suffer like a human, to live like a human and to know how we humans feel things and see things. Yes, he was divine as well, but he did have a human side too. So I think that's another thing we can avoid if, you know, pride. Obviously, it's going to help us become more humble to put others first and to think of others first. Again, this requires concerted thought and effort. It's not something that just happens accidentally. It's something you work on. It's something you work toward. And what about if, say things are going really, really well in my life right now. I've got, you know, things are calm, things are cool, everybody's good, nobody's sick, I have enough money, I have enough food, I have a home. How easy is it to get sucked into the status quo and forget that other people may not be in that same positive state at that time? I think people like us that come to church and hear announcements about people that we are close to as Christians helps keep us on track. But a lot of people in the world don't have that. I mean, it's their great loss to not have connection to other people like that, unless it's at a bar or on their baseball team or something. They don't have that connection that helps them to know what's going on in other people's lives and that things that are bothering them that they can pray for. It's such a blessing to have each other. To know and to pray for and hopefully pray for us. Does anybody else have any other things that praying for others would help us to push away or resist?
Well, along that line of your thought, I put down complacency, because sometimes we just get stuck in one gear and we don't see, we hear, but we don't hear. And we just go on our
own. It's easy to get involved in our own lives and just trudging down our little train track and not looking to the right or the left. It's very easy to do that.
And you lose compassion, just like the guys who passed the man beside
us. And that's one of the major things about Jesus. When we're having the Lord's Supper, sometimes I think about the compassion that God had for our lost state and sent his son. And Jesus had it too. He had the compassion that, or he wouldn't have come down here and suffer and die like that if it wasn't for us. He did it for us. But compassion is a big, big part of that to me. And that's something that I would like to emulate. I don't know that I'm particularly good at it, but it's something I pray for, that I can increase that along with some other stuff. Okay.
One thing I thought about is sometimes there are sins we think we cannot be tempted. You know, we just think, that's just not my nature. And then we have a brother or a sister who we feel the same way about. They would just never do that. That's just something that could not happen to them. And then it makes us realize when we're praying for them, hey, I didn't think that could ever happen to them. I pray it never happens to me. Help me do the thing that's going to keep me from going down that road.
More than one person said to me after I got a divorce that they had many, many, many talks as a result of my situation about what they could do to avoid that. And, you know, I'm sorry that something had to happen for that something bad had to happen for them to have those talks. But that's a good thing, to be aware of what's going on around you in the world and use that to your advantage. Use that to help your marriage or your relationship with your kids or something.
Along that same line, you know, my parents have lost two children, which is a horrible thing to go through. But because they have, they've been able to counsel others who have lost children. And I'm thinking of one specific instance where grandfather ran over with a tractor to
one of his grandchildren.
And they all went to church together, and they had to deal with that relationship after that happened. And my parents became their go-to people when they were having problems, whereas my parents wouldn't have been able to be there for them
right. In
that way and have that connection had they not gone through it.
And you know what? The key to that is making yourself available. Your parents could have sat down in their own pity party and just and drawn within themselves and never looked around for somebody to help. I think that is key. You have to be available when somebody needs help. And how are people going to know that if you're just, you know, holed up somewhere and not interacting with people or quit going to church or whatever? Okay, any more comments before we shut it down?